Hi, beautiful listeners. Welcome to the Teacher Healer podcast, where we get to geek out on all things education and heal the world at the same time. Lael Stone is an educator, TEDx speaker, author, mother, and parenting counselor. She is also the co-creator of Woodline Primary School, an innovative new school based on emotional well-being and connection. Lael is the co-host of the Aware Parenting podcast and a sought-after public speaker who talks candidly about her experiences and her great passion, creating wellness in families through connection and communication. Listen to me speak with Lael about her journey with Woodline Primary School and her dream for an education system that prioritizes emotional well-being for both students and teachers. Hi, Lael. Welcome to the Teacher Healer podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited to have you and hear a lot about your school that you started. Now, you've come to education through an unusual pathway compared to other teachers, which gives you a unique insight into children. So do you want to just fill the listeners in on your journey?
So I mean, I'm not a formally trained teacher, but I've pretty much been teaching my whole life. And if I go back way, way, way back to the beginning, I guess, of when I first started working with children or other humans, it was when I was 19 and I started my first company. I'd finished high school, I went and traveled for a while, came back, and I actually started a business as a children's entertainer many years ago. And this was way before the Wiggles was even a thing. This is telling you how old I am now. I used to go to people's houses and entertain their kids for their birthdays, and then my team grew. Then we used to put on big shows and pantomimes on school holidays, and I spent nearly 7 or 8 years with that business that I had, which was all about play and connection with children. So, you know, I often really do believe that nothing is wasted in what we do in our lives. Like every job we have, every experience we have, you know, folds in somewhere in the bigger picture. So for 7 or 8 years, I pretty much just played with children, and my job was to entertain them, but it was also just to create connection and get kids involved and all that kind of stuff. And then I actually became a parent. And then once I became a parent, I was like, oh God, I don't want to play with other people's kids. I'm just having to play with my own. And so I actually ended up closing that business. And then I actually started working in the field of childbirth, and I became a childbirth educator. And so actually was teaching again, but to adults. So I was teaching adults about birth, and then that moved into working a lot with adults around trauma, and particularly parents and babies that had trauma. So I started working in that field, doing a lot of counseling. I was also running workshops at the time. And then my work from there kind of then moved into towards parenting. And so again, I started teaching workshops for parents on how to be a connected parent and using play for connection and listening to feelings and all those kind of things. So it kind of, you know, I was teaching, and it was evolving just through my own work, mainly for parents. And then probably about maybe 4 and a bit years ago now, one of my clients who I'd been working with for a few years, she was talking to me about how, you know, discouraged she was with the schooling system. One of her kids was about to start prep, and she's like, you know, I don't like how they use these punitive measures with the kids, and you know, he can't move his body when he needs to, and you know, I was just listening, and I'd heard this so often with parents I'd worked with. I'd witnessed it with my own 3 children. And she said to me, gosh, I wish we could just build a school based on all the philosophies and things that you've taught me. And, you know, my first response was, well, I've got no idea how to build a school. But then she just said to me, look, you know, she has the means and the funds to make it happen. And she said, what if, you know, what if we did it? Like, why not? Why, what if we created a school where all the things you've taught me exist? And so, you know, it was one of those things, it was one of those opportunities that come along in your life, and you know, often you go, be like, I don't know how to do this, or this feels too full on, or this is too big, this is too big. Mm-hmm. And I kind of sat on it for a month or two, because I was just like, I can't do this, I don't know what to do. And then, I don't know, it was just one day I had this random thing happen, and I just thought, well, who am I not to do this? It just takes one person to be brave and courageous and try something different and see what could happen. So I was like, okay, Mel, let's do it. And then I kind of was like, right, I'm going to need support and I'm going to need guidance and I'm going to need consultants. And so I kind of put the word out there to just follow whoever turned up around people who did know, you know, how to build schools. And at the same time, as well as doing this, I was actually also working in secondary schools teaching sex education. So that was another thing that I offered as part of my kind of parenting toolkit. I was teaching parents on how to talk to their kids about sex. And then I was working with teenagers from year 7 up to year 11 on pleasure-based sex education, relationships, intimacy, well-being, all that kind of stuff. So I was actually in the secondary schools teaching as well. So all of that kind of formed together with Mel, and then we set out on a quest of, okay, well, what would we want our school to look like? And really for me, it came back to this trauma-informed lens around it's very hard for children to learn if they don't feel safe. So how do we help children feel safe in their bodies? Mm. How do we help them feel safe to be who they need to be? How do we help them unpack the baggage that they may be carrying, whether that's because they've had a really rough morning at home, whether it's because they've got a new sibling, whether it's because they're feeling really anxious about learning, whatever it is. How do we look at it through the lens of connection, of trauma-informed practice, of creating safety for these children and giving them choice and autonomy? Because my absolute fundamental belief was when kids feel safe, then their learning, you know, increases and it becomes possible for when there's passion and there's excitement and then there's choice and autonomy and all those kind of things. So that's how it kind of started to come about. So it took us nearly 3 years till we opened the school. So I sat down and in the beginning wrote every policy for the school. And then, you know, I had some wonderful, amazing consultants and people to support and help us to really get it over the line and help us get really clear on what it is that we wanted and what we were aiming to do. I worked on it for a really long time, and then other people came involved, and then we started to build our team, amazing principal who really believed in what we were doing and has now taken it, you know, forward into the next level. And it's actually, you know, when I go to my school now, I look and think this is even better than I dreamed it to be. It's pretty wild. Mm. So that's kind of how it came about. You know, it's building a school is a really tricky thing. There's a reason why not many people do it, because it's hard. It's really hard, and it costs a lot of money, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of grit, but it's incredible. You know, it's one of the things that I'm the most proud of what we've created at Woodline Primary, which is our beautiful little school. That's kind of how I came to it. And it's interesting, actually, and even my principal says this to me. She's like, many people who have been teachers and have been in the system, I think because we're often indoctrinated into systems and we don't even realize, I think because I wasn't part of that system, I could look at it from a different angle. So I would come to her and go, could we do this? And what about that? And she'd be like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. We could try this, or we could try it that way. And so there was something amazing in the innovation of it, because I wasn't necessarily, well, this is how it should look, you know, and I understood that we had to incorporate the curriculum, and I understand about all the other elements that are at play. But I think because I was coming from a different angle, you know, then we had the opportunity to create something pretty awesome.
It reminds me, it's like the perfect example of what Elizabeth describes as the hummingbird person, you know, who cross-pollinates from different industries and backgrounds. Yeah. It's cool. Yeah. I think you're right. I was on Twitter the other day, and there was a teacher, as we all do, it's like, gee, I wish I could just start my own school, and here's how the curriculum would look like. And we all have that dream, but I just think it's fabulous that this kind of landed on you rather than you chasing it.
Yeah. Well, it was one of those things, I think. You don't often get handed an opportunity that says, look, I'll fund what you believe and go for it. Because, you know, for a lot of people, and I've spoken to so many people since we opened Woodline who were like, I really want to build a school. How do I go about it? And from people all over the world I've spoken to about it, and so many of them are like, oh, I just don't know how I'm going to get the money and the funding. And I'm like, look, if you don't have a property and you don't have funding, it's really hard. Like, that's a big piece of what you have to get first. Mm. And then there's all the other elements that have to line up around it, around governance and policies and, you know, setting up your board and just the legals and, you know, finance. Just there's so many factors in it. You know, we can have this beautiful vision and idea of what the school is, and that actually becomes a smaller part of a bigger business that it is, which is what a school is.
Yeah, and I think that's the part that the teachers, you know, we struggle to accept a little bit, is You have to be a CEO to start a school, really, don't you? Not a teacher. And even though maybe they think they're the best people, there's just so much more going on.
There is so much, and that's why you need a really amazing team. And, you know, I speak to a lot of teachers and I'm like, I love that you can see how it needs to look different and why it needs to change. And that is, you know, you're right on the money of why it doesn't work on some levels and how we could create change. And I think it is, I often say to them, don't give up. There's small things you can do. And, you know, we're trying to turn a really big ship here and it takes time. And so, you know, I feel my hope and my dreams for Woodlion is that we're able to really beautifully document what we're doing and how we're doing it and really create some research and study around how we're doing it so that it can be an example of how it could be done and how we can do it differently. You know, that is really what I see. Like we already, the team already at Woodlion see, my God, the shift in the children and the change within families and what we are creating there. And now, you know, like how the world works, we need to create some evidence to say this is how it could be done in a different way.
I love that you're doing that. That's so great. So you can pay it forward and help people sort of, you know, do it again and learn from the lessons that you guys are learning. So that's brilliant. Good on you. So I'm just wondering, like, in terms of like a student experience going through Woodlion Primary, you know, what would that look like on a day for them? What is the setup?
Yep. So we really invite kids to come early. Like, you know, we have the kids can come from 8:30 and play. So we have the most beautiful grounds. We have swings, trampolines, we have animals. Often there's one staff member always feeding the animals in the morning, so kids can come and join in with that if they need to. We really encourage kids to come and connect with their mates. Most of the team is outside there to connect with the kids in the morning. So we kind of don't really want the just quick drop off with 5 minutes to go. We want them to come and connect and anchor and kind of land for the day. So then, you know, our day starts with circle time, which a lot of schools do, which is really just about connecting in with how everyone's feeling. So we have small class sizes. We have maximum 16 kids in a class. And we have one, we call them guides at our school. So we have a main guide who's a teacher, and then we have an assistant guide in each classroom. And the assistant guide is there for support, but they're really there as that emotional holding if children have got some stuff going on. One of the biggest focuses is on in our school is on emotional awareness and on helping children to find, you know, their center or to be in balance so they can learn. So we are really big on that if a child has started the day and they're feeling uptight and they're anxious or there's something going on, our goal is to help kids to be able to identify, this is how I'm feeling and this is what I need. So when kids don't necessarily have the ability to do that, then we see it in their behavior, and that's when they become really disruptive or they can't listen or they're picking on other kids or all that kind of stuff. So our philosophy always at the school is to look behind the behavior. So our guide's job, assistant guide's job, is really just to be tuning into the kids, seeing how they are, so that if a child is having a hard time, we can be like, hey, let's go outside and have a quick swing, or let's go jump on the trampoline, or let's go see the cows, or let's go feed the pigs, or let's go for a walk, let's have a chat, let's do something that can help them offload whatever's going on for them so they can come back into balance. So we usually start with circle time in the morning. And then, you know, one of our other biggest pieces of our school is really around choice and autonomy. So we have whatever is our kind of provocation. We change them every 2 weeks, and we work with the Australian curriculum at our school. We have the first hour and a half really of inquiry, and that's where children can choose how and what they would like to do around their learning. So we have all different stations set up, sensory play, we have creative play, and we are a play-based learning school as well, so most of it is done through play. We work with having a photographer and having two reporters. So depending on what the provocation is, the kids will go and ask questions of other kids. They'll go and document what the other children are doing. And we swap that around each day. And then we have our focus children. So the guide gets to focus in on one or two children that day to really just, you know, measure how their learning is going, what they need more support with, all those kind of things. So particularly our morning is really around giving children the choice to learn in the way they want to learn, and be able to move around the classroom and all those kind of things. So we see that that works really beautifully if children will naturally migrate to what makes sense for them and how they want to learn. And then there's often lots more interest and inquiry that comes from that. Now I've done this, what about that? So it really is trying to give and set up spaces. We have a most amazing leader of learning at our school, Rachel, who really is so intentional in setting up the spaces in our classrooms to create that interest and that curiosity for children to go a bit further with their learning. So we usually do that for the morning, and that usually kind of incorporates our literacy elements. Then we usually have our break. So again, kids go outside for recess. We don't really call it recess, but and you know, we have big sand pits. Kids can take their shoes off. They can climb trees. They can, you know, be as long as it's safe. And we also talk about, you know, safety elements, how high you can climb the tree, what we can do, all that kind of stuff. We have building materials there for kids to build with. You know, it really is about they can get dirty, they can get their hands in stuff, like, you know. And I think the beauty of having a smaller school is that if we find the children are really engrossed in their play, we will extend recess or lunch to be longer. You know, we have these great sand pits, and sometimes the whole school will come to the sand pits and make these amazing sand cities. And there's all these incredible, you know, negotiations going on and leadership, and it's just extraordinary to watch. And we're like, why would we stop that? Wow. Because there is so much learning going on here within these elements. And it's fascinating to watch what the children as a collective move towards and move away from. So there'll be times where it's all about the sandpit and all about this, and then there'll be times where it's all about something else. And it's fascinating to watch where the children take the play and where it moves to. It's beautiful to watch. And so, and you know, as a team, you know, we are always tuning into where the children are, and really a big part of it is saying to the guides, if you are out there on play supervision, like, you know, just watch what's going on. If you feel like there's something, you know, wait longer. We don't have bells. We have a singing bowl at our school too. So, and usually the children will go and get the singing bowl to let everybody else know that it's time to come in. So, you know, little things like that are quite beautiful. And then usually we would do on a standard day, we'd kind of usually do our numeracy then, and we try and do all our numeracy outside if we can. So wherever we can do learning outside, we will. And that will often always incorporate nature, sticks, you know, leaves, things, all that kind of stuff. Lots of measurement, all the beautiful numeracy where kids often don't even know that they're doing maths, but that's how they're learning. So we really try to incorporate it with as much outside play if we can. And then depending on the day, we have specialists. We do Auslan at our school. We also have performing arts. We have visual arts, and we have PE. So depending on what days we've got on, sometimes we'll have specialists. You know, then we have, again, a long lunch break, and then in the afternoon we do a different kind of project-based learning or passion-based learning or whatever is the theme or stuff we're working on. So our older kids at the moment, they're going to build a tree house at the school, so they're designing the tree house. Oh, cool. And we've been working with builders, and they're about to go on an excursion to go and see some construction stuff. And, you know, we've got a lot of beautiful parents at our school who are builders. So, you know, really wherever we can bring hands-on practical learning, that's what we want to do with the children. And we also have, you know, a big, one of our key values is on environmental responsibility. So we incorporate that in is all our learning. So I'm very proud to say for a whole school, we usually have one bag of rubbish a week. That's all we have at our school.
Oh no.
So amazing. We recycle everything. So most of all our food scraps go to the animals, and then we recycle all our plastics and cardboard and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we have a big push on environmental responsibility and also incorporating that into our learning. So we do a lot of enviro stuff, and we also have a really strong connection to Indigenous culture and learning too. So we're very blessed to have one of the most amazing Indigenous teachers. He's a parent at our school, and so we'll often come and do, you know, stuff around our culture, you know, the land that we live on. We're really close to the Yuyang, so we get to go and do incursions and stuff there. Excursions there. And it really is about, again, how do we're creating a bush tucker garden at the moment as well, and how do we really connect into those Indigenous roots and not you know, and really doing it well, like really incorporating it into to all our learning. So that's kind of a bit of a snapshot of what we do at the school. You know, we look, even simple things which were very important to me in building the school is really around choice and autonomy for kids, that that sometimes children are hungry and they need to eat. So we always have grazing platters every morning. So some kids who come into school in the morning will come and just chop up vegetables or fruit with one of the guides. Everyone brings a fruit or a vegetable to school every day. We have grazing platters, so they're chopped up in the morning and then they're in the classroom for the children just to eat in the morning if they want. So it's just all fruit and vegetables. So that's always there for the kids in the morning. You know, they have toilets that are just right besides their learning spaces, so they can just go when they need to. You know, they can drink when they need to. They're allowed to move around. You know, we just have general guidelines, which is, you know, when we're trying to give you instruction, we really need you to sit and listen to those, but then we'll always give you the choice and autonomy when we need. So, and really, again, when we can give children choice to do something, we will. You know, and we say this to kids, sometimes we have to move as a group, and so we're doing this. But and what I think they've learned over the years, the year and a half that we're there, for the kids that have been there, is that yeah, there is lots of choice, and they do get to feel autonomous in what they're doing. And sometimes we have to do stuff together, and they've learned how to integrate that. And you know, we find it works quite well. And our philosophy is too, if a child's not wanting to learn or they're having a hard time, then we're asking the question, what's going on for them? And that's why we have extra staff, to be able to lean in to see what's going on, you know, to be able to help them. So we have, you know, a lot of boys in our school who really learn beautifully through their bodies and their hands, and sitting down and writing and reading is really tricky. So how do we incorporate their learning in stuff they're interested in? So we do construction and building and movement and lots of stuff, particularly for kids like that, that actually do, you know, learn better in those ways. So it was, you know, the philosophy is really trying to get to know these children and go, who are you? How do you learn best? And how can we support you to be the best, most magnificent version of yourself?
That just sounds like heaven. So nice. I'm just wondering, like, how it sounds quite different to your usual environment. So how do you prepare your guides for existing in this space?
Yes. Look, it's tricky because, and our guides will all say, attest to this, is that most schooling environments are punitive, which means you must be good. And if you're not good, I'm going to put your name in the board. If you are good, I will reward you. And, you know, there's many, many problems that go with that. Like, if you want to know more about that, you just can look at the work of Alfie Cohn. He has written many books and explains it beautifully around the issue with punishments and rewards. Mm-hmm. And so the trick with that, and we found that with the guides, is that you, in a situation like that, you are using your power over the children to get them to do what they want. Right. And really what we're doing in those moments is saying to the children, you must be good. And if you're not good, we're going to withdraw our connection or our attention or our love from you. And so the philosophy that I work with our guides is that children naturally want to feel good, and they naturally want to feel connected to us. And this is the same in parenting. They want to do the right thing. No child feels good hitting another child. No child feels good, you know, screaming or, you know, having a hard time. They're doing it on some level because they can't help it, or there's a need that's not being met. There's something in the way. And so really how we work with that is connection always has to come first, so that when an adult is deeply connected with a child and the child feels connected and feels seen, they are more likely to want to cooperate. They are more likely to be respectful, all those kind of things. And so, you know, preparing our staff for this has been tricky because many of them have had to do a lot of unlearning. You know, many of them have been taught in the schooling system, well, this is how you do discipline in a classroom. And usually it's about, I'll give you a warning, and then it's this, and then it's that, and then I'll take something away from you. So, you know, the teachers are like, well, what do we do? I'm like, well, we work on the relationship. But also we have like a four-step process that we work with in our school, which is really around when kids are out of balance or misbehaving, what we do. You know, so the first step is always, is there a need that's not being met there? Do they just need to move their bodies? Do they need to go and sit somewhere else? Do they need to go to the toilet? Do they need something to eat? Like, is there a need? And once we meet that need, then that can, you know, they can often feel better. The second thing we we always look for is, do they need more information? So some children really need information, and when they don't have that information, it can make them feel quite anxious. You know, if, for some children, if you just say, right, we're going over here now and we're doing this, and then they're like, but what and how long for, and we don't normally do this on Tuesdays, and what does that mean? And so we, wherever and always, we are always giving information around why we're doing what we're doing, how we're doing it, how long we'll be doing it for, so that those children who need information, that can make them feel more settled or calmer in their being. So, and that can also be with learning. It could be that if a child's having trouble, it's like, okay, do you not understand? Can I explain it to you in another way? Let's give you more information. So firstly, we're looking at a need. Second, we're looking for information. The third thing we look at is, can we be playful and bring some connection to what's happening? So if a child is having a hard time, perhaps they need a little bit of playfulness, a little bit of silliness that allows us to connect in with them, that helps them feel, ah, okay, there's someone on my side. And then the fourth thing that we do is we set a boundary or a limit for a child if they are having a hard time, where we might have to set a no, I'm not willing for you to do that. I'm going to have to move you over here. You know, let's go and visit one of our other guides because I can see you're having a hard time. It is not a punishment. It is not shaming a child, but it is setting a limit with the understanding that if they push up against that limit and they get angry and upset, then we welcome their tears. We welcome their feelings because we look at it as them being able to offload or unpack some of the big stuff they're carrying, so they can come back into balance. So we usually work with those four steps. It isn't as easy as just saying, right, if you don't stop, you're not going to go out for recess, you know, when the bell rings, right? Yeah. It's not as easy as that. Yeah. It takes time and it takes energy and it takes a lot more from the guides to build that relationship and focus on connection to do it. And that's why we also have an assistant in the room, is because sometimes it's too hard to be teaching 14 other kids if one child is having a really, really hard time. And that's why we always are looking to have some extra adults around to support them if they need with whatever's going on. So I think for many of our team, there was a lot of unlearning that had to happen around what they'd how they'd done it. I do a lot of training with them around these philosophies and these understandings. We check in about it a lot of the time. We keep asking what worked for you, what didn't. Our principal is amazing. So, you know, every week in our meetings, she's like, what worked, what didn't, what do you need support with, what's some other ideas? And the team are really brilliant at sharing their ideas around, okay, this child, that doesn't work, but this works, and this is what I found, and I used this playfulness here, and that was brilliant, and I set a limit here, and then this child had tears, and then what I noticed is this. So there's a lot of talking collaboration around what are we seeing, what works and what doesn't.
So I have a question then.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a lot of teachers leaving the profession at the moment with due to overwhelm and what they might term behavior management issues, et cetera, et cetera. Do you find that your teachers are sort of better adjusted? Are they feeling happier in this kind of space?
I think one of the key components for me when I built this or created this school was we have to support the adults in order to be able to do what we want to do with the children. It's impossible to turn up, and this is from a parenting lens as well as a teaching lens, it's impossible to turn up and hold space for your kids' feelings and be playful if you are exhausted, if you haven't had enough sleep, if you are under-resourced, right? It's very hard for a teacher to connect and be playful and do all those things when they're like, oh my God, I've got to get through this curriculum, or I've got to do this data, or I've got to do this, I've got to do that. So we come from the angle of it is relationship first, learning second. So, you know, a lot of what we've also seen is some of our teachers are like, oh God, I don't feel like I'm hitting this part, or I don't feel like I'm being able to get deliver this part of the curriculum. And then we go, okay, let's remember there's learning happening everywhere. And where else are we seeing the learning? Not just in this, you've ticked this box, you've ticked this box and ticked this box. So it's been really great for them to be able to look at it from a different lens and go, actually, I'm seeing lots of learning here. It just may not look as conventional as what it is. So my philosophy is 100%. We have to support our team in order to be able to do the job that we want them to do. So what that looks like is lots of checking in. How are you feeling? What's going on? We welcome tears from our staff always. We're like, some come in and go, I'm really overwhelmed. And we're like, sit down and have a big cry and we'll listen to you. And well done for being really vulnerable and feeling it. And how do we help you? And what can we do? And what do we need to do to support you? So, you know, it is so much around how do we help these adults feel supported so they can do the job they need to do. So, you know, I know from, and I'm not a teacher working in a school classically, but I know from many, you know, conversations with our guides, they're like, this doesn't happen in other schools. We don't get the support that we're needing. And so for me, you know, my role in the school, because I am on the board and I am the director of vision for the school, but my role really is to support the leaders. So I support our leader of learning, I support our wellbeing guide, I support our principal. And my job is to go and listen to their feelings. So I'm like, tell me all the things that are hard, have a vent, complain, get it all out. How can I support you? What do you think that's teaching you? So my job is to support them. Their job is to support the team's job is to support the kids. So it's not perfect because we don't live in a perfect world, but, and you know, we've only been open for a year and a half. We are learning what works. We are constantly tuning in with our staff saying what feels good, what doesn't, how do we support you? What do you think we need to do? And because we're a new school, we're constantly evolving and we're constantly still asking the question, how can we do it better? You know, what does work, what doesn't, what is the possibilities here? So I think it for me, it comes back to people, it comes back to connection, comes back to nourishing the team so that they can do the job we want them to do and are willing to do it, because it's not as it's an extra ask often to teach your parent or, you know, to turn up in this way.
Yeah, because I'm just wondering, like, we've sort of grown up in a world where expressing your feelings in public is not really a done thing. So I just wonder if you come up against teachers who really struggle with children being expressive in class. And
yeah, well, I guess we don't hire teachers who aren't right. comfortable with that. Yeah, so it's cool. So funny. Perfect. Like, even in our interview process, you know, the questions we ask, I guess, aren't standard questions, but they are all about, you know, doing your own self-development work. They're all about reflection. And most of the people who come to interviews end up crying in the interview. They all go, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And we're like, oh no, that's brilliant. We're like, we just like tick, well done. We're very clear. Feelings are our priority at the school for everybody, for teachers, for the guides, for the parents, for the children. Like, we welcome it, because the more we lean into feeling it and process it, then the freer we are to be who we need to be. And so it's modeled. So a lot of even in our training is all about connection and sharing and vulnerability. And, you know, in order to be a team that works together, we need to feel safe with each other. And that comes right from the principal all the way down. You know, our beautiful principal Claire has shared and cried in front of the team, and everybody has, you know, and we just see that as really normal and beautiful. So it is an environment that is deeply supportive. And, you know, if a staff member walks into our principal's office and they're like, I'm not coping, I'm having a really hard day, and they burst into tears, she goes, brilliant, sit down, let me get someone to cover your class, I'm here, I'm listening, let me make you a cup of tea, let's move it. Because when you feel seen and heard, then you're going to feel better to go back to doing what you need to do. Because we know, and I know this from all my work with children over the years, when we are pretending that we're okay, children know it, they feel it, and it doesn't feel as safe for them. We rather have an authentic adult with children saying, hey, I'm having a hard day today, but I'm still able to turn up and be here. Then kids are like, ah, good, okay. My inner barometer that was telling me you're off is actually on the money, and that makes me feel better.
That's really interesting, actually. Yeah, I can't even imagine the blessings that those teachers must be feeling, because it's not like it's not happening anyway. Like, I know, like, we can't pretend teachers don't cry in the course of their work. My first year, I think I cried under my desk every second day. So to have that support, wow, you know, good on you guys. And I'm sure there are many people who are going to be listening to this who have got a few tears peeking out of their eyes at the moment, just thinking about that, having that in their school. So, yeah, that's really lovely.
I think, you know, for me, what was so important in building this school is that it had to be authentic, and that if we are going to stand for trauma-informed education, if we are going to make a stand for deep connection and encouraging children to be who they need to be, then the adults have to model it and the adults have to live it. And so, you know, the team that we have or the staff that we're wanting to attract have got to be people that are willing to do their own work. They've got to be people that are willing to look at their shadow. They've got to be people who are willing to be vulnerable, because we can only, you know, I know this in my work, we only take people as far as we're willing to go ourselves. And even though this is about teaching and educating children, there is this whole emotional, social element that is also part of what a teacher does. And so if we want to do that well, we also have to be in tune with ourselves to know where we sit within that.
I just love this. I feel like if this was done more and more broadly, that the social shift that might occur across a generation would just be sort of extraordinary.
It is, to me, is the answer of moving forward as a planet. You know, the work I do with parenting, you know, for many, many years has been around how do we create more connection in our families. And you can use tools by listening and playing and all that stuff, but unless you're willing to look at your own crap as an adult, it's only going to band-aid so far. Like, we as humans have to do the work on our own stories and our own wounds. Mm. Because if we don't, we just unconsciously pass that on to the next generation. And so the more adults that we have that are willing to lean into looking at their own shadow, looking at their own work and their own stories, then they're able to turn up as more compassionate humans, and they're able to turn up as more compassionate adults to model that to children, to teach them what empathy is, to tune into them in whole different ways. So if we can do that in the home, and then again, our reason for building the school was Mel and I, you know, Mel was like, I want what happens in our home to be continued at school. I want to be able to drop my child at school knowing that they're going to be held, and that if they're having a hard time, there's going to be an adult who's not going to tell them to suck it up and get on with it, or who's not going to dismiss them, or who's not going to make them wrong, but who's going to sit there and say, hey, you're having a hard time and I'm with you and you're doing a good job. And so we wanted it to continue from hopefully what we hold in the home into our education as well, so that it isn't a disconnect.
It's just so powerful, though, because you wouldn't be happy watching your partner treat your child in some of the ways that teachers do.
Yeah.
And, you know, and like you said, it's sort of not their fault in some ways. It's a system they've inherited. It's what they're taught at school. It's what they experienced at school. It's been passed down for generation upon generation upon generation.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to unlearn and relearn something new. But that idea of being able to send your child to somewhere where they're feeling safe and connected is really, it's what every parent hopes for and wants. But isn't it amazing actually what we tolerate, because we don't feel like there are too many other options?
Yeah.
Because I know there are parents sending their kids to school every day knowing that they're going to get belted, yelled at today.
That was me with my three children. Like, I have a 22-year-old, a 19-year-old and a 14-year-old, and I feel like, and again, it's just the system. I have no blame. I absolutely believe teachers are doing the best job they know how.
Mm.
You know, I know so many of them are like, this feels broken to me. I don't know how to fix it and change it. You know, it's a bigger systemic issue that what we're dealing with. And I watched my children navigate schooling in that way. And I was just at a loss. I was like, all I can do is be there at the end of the day to help you unpack what happened, to listen to your feelings about it, to give you insight into what may be going on in that bigger picture, to really help them have emotional intelligence and understanding around how the systems work and what that looks like. And what's really interesting, you know, my beautiful son, he works at Woodline now, and he's there really to support a lot of the boys physically. And, you know, and when, you know, we do a big training with our guides, and I was sitting down with my son saying, you know, this is how we work with behavior, and this is how we do this, and this is how we do that. And he looks at me and he's like, Mum, of course that is. That's the only way to do it, right? And I remember looking at him thinking, oh man, he knows this in his cells and his being, because that's how we've raised him, to not be punitive, to not to shame, but to always go, what's going on for you? So his natural state is to do that with the children naturally. I mean, he works as a disability support worker as well, so he's really beautifully attuned to kids and when they're having a hard time. And what I've witnessed with him is that he doesn't have to do a whole lot of unlearning because he's already known what it feels like to be responded to that way, and then it's naturally passed on.
That's so nice. Because I was just, while you were talking, before you started talking about him, I was wondering, I'm like, gosh, your kids are grown. Like, I wonder if there's an element of disappointment that they've missed out on this school that you've built, or whether they'd done it earlier. Or...
Yeah. Well, they did say this to me. Why couldn't you have built this meeting? I'm like, I know. And my youngest, who's in year 9 at the moment, she's like, can't you build me a high school? Like, you know, I just want everything you do there, I want in a secondary school. And, you know, she's currently going to a Catholic, you know, school, and, you know, she's coming up against all those elements of punitive discipline and this, this, and this. And, you know, what's beautiful though is she can see it. She's like, this doesn't mean I'm a bad person, and this is the only way they know how to control kids. Like, she's got insight into it. So it kind of rolls off her. But for a lot of kids, they don't. And then, you know, it sets up that story of I'm good or I'm bad, I'm not smart, I'm this, I'm that. You know, there's all those elements that go with it. And again, I really want to reemphasize, I know everyone's doing the best job they know how, right? We're working in a system, and we're working in a paradigm that hasn't yet moved. You know, it's still strongly in this behaviorism paradigm that just says, when you're good, I reward you. When you're bad, I'll you know, take something away from you. And, you know, that's where we still are in the world. And we need to shift the needle a bit, a lot.
A lot. It's funny because I remember standing there as a teacher, and there's days when you feel powerless. And I was reflecting on that this morning for some weird reason. I had a teacher dream last night that was quite a pleasant one, but sometimes I have the sort of nightmare where I'm like completely powerless and they're just running riot. And I know I stood in front of a class like that, and I'm literally searching through my toolkit for different strategies. Like, let's try the softest one first and see if they'll respond. I'll do the silent waiting. I'll do the this, I'll do the this. And then eventually you get to the point where you're like, I have nothing else left but to punish or to yell or to, you know, guilt them or whatever else it is. I'm disappointed, whatever else. And and when you know that they're so effective and they work, then it becomes really easy just to pull out that reliable old one that you're like, well, they know I don't do this one very often, so when I do it, I'm serious, you know, and they'll stop. But it's it actually does break a little bit of your heart on the inside to have to do it, because, you know, you've tried all the other things and you get to your wit's end and you don't have the structure around you to know what's better, you know.
And look, at our school, when that happens, because it still does, we say to our guides, take kids outside, just drop whatever you're doing, go outside, go let them run, go get them to take their shoes off, let's all just reconnect. Like, don't keep pushing. Like, move and shift, and or call in some help, or don't, you know, when we're getting to the point where we're wanting to yell or we're wanting to do this, it's when we need to take a pause and we need to shift the energy of what's going on here. And, you know, we're fortunate enough that all our classrooms have outdoor elements to them, that when we often do take them outside and we go, right, you need to go climb some trees or you need to do that, the beauty of nature holds a lot of the children to help them come back. And we also then tune into what is going on collectively as a group. Now, this last term that we've just all lived through has been massive. And I know, not just at our school, but for many other educators I speak to, the behavior's been huge, right? Because this is the first full term children have done in 2 years, well, particularly for our kids down here in Victoria. And so I also believe, you know, because I work with trauma, there's a lot of kids that have got PTSD, and parents, they don't even realize they have. There's a lot of needing to build safety again. There's a lot needing to build connection, community, all the kind of things that we've just lived through the last 2 years are turning up, and they turn up in the classroom. And so there's going to be testing, as in the kids are going to test the limits and the boundaries. There's going to be a lot more feelings that are popping up. So we have to be super, super compassionate, and we have to be really gentle with what's happening with the kids, and super gentle with the team as well, because they're living through, you know, this whole other unprecedented time, which is peppered with trauma everywhere. And so that makes it super, super hard. So I think, you know, what we've just come through too is adding a whole other dynamic and element to it.
Right. And I guess the temptation for me is to ask if you have any secret tips. But I don't know if you do, but I'll throw it out there anyway.
Around helping the children?
Around how to help teachers cope during this period of time.
Yeah. So, well, again, I come back to, you know, and look, trauma is, I guess, my work, and so it's individual for everyone. But what helps, and, you know, this is kind of the bigger picture too, what helps us move trauma is when we feel safe. So when the body starts to feel safe enough, it will start to release what's going on. And that's why we often do see a lot of tears at our school, because children will come, they feel that sense of connection, safety, and then the feelings come out, right? And we don't see that as wrong. We see that as beautiful, and we see that as a gorgeous work that we're doing there to help the kids then feel better. We're not there to be the children's therapists, and but we are there to witness and watch and just hold if we can, and then if it moves, it moves. In a standard classroom, again, I would just come back to, how can we create more connection? How can we do more listening? How do we help the kids move their bodies in ways that feel stuck sometimes? I mean, I get asked often to go and do training with teachers, but I am really hesitant to do it, because I feel like what I'd be offering them is a band-aid, because their system isn't set up to do it in the way that we do it. And it often won't work, because when you have 26 kids in your class, you can't sit and listen to one child's feelings. Right. You just can't, right? Mm. Or many schools don't have the options to go outside and take the shoes off and connect with nature. Or there isn't sensory things that children can do to move their bodies. Like, you know, there's a whole lot that's missing in the infrastructure to support what we probably know that children need. And so my heart really breaks for them, because I can see that they're working in situations that are super challenging because they don't have the tools or support they need to support the kids in the way that they know they probably could. So, you know, at the end of the day, I always just come back to this connection, listening where we can. It's never doubt just one adult getting down low, looking a child in the eye with compassion or with kindness, a gentle touch. Like, just those things matter. Children feel them. They feel safety. They feel connection. And that when children sense and feel that, they're more likely to seek that out when they're having a hard time.
Mm. Yeah, it's all true.
I wish I could give you a 1, 2, 3 magic do this, but I think it's bigger
than
that.
No, you're right. Yeah, like if the systems aren't there and the infrastructure's not there, and it does make it tough. So I'm sorry, teachers. It looks like some of you are going to be stuck in a little twilight zone where, you know, you just got to keep battling on with what you have. But if you can implement some of that stuff, you know, do try, and good luck. Mm. So let's flip this around to a bit of a more positive energy here now. So do you have any favorite stories of success that you want to share?
Oh, I have many from what we've witnessed. For us, success is things like one beautiful little girl who came to our school this year who was starting to feel upset in the classroom, wanted to go for a walk with one of the assistant guides. And the assistant guide just said, "Let's go for a walk," and said, "What's happening?" And they burst into tears and they said, "At my old school, I was never allowed to cry or feel what I was really feeling. And here I am. And so can we just walk and can I just cry?" And this guide was like, "Yes." And so she just walked and cried, and then they laughed, and it was maybe 5-6 minutes. All they needed was connection and safety. And then she went, "I feel better," and then just went back into the classroom. Like, to me, that is a huge success, that this child is learning, hey, it's safe for me to feel what I need to feel. I can seek out support and then I can move it. We teach the children a lot about when anger comes up or when things feel really tricky, that often behind anger is usually powerlessness or sadness or worry. And if we can hold, or we can, you know, find a safe way to bring that anger, then we can reach behind that and feel what we're feeling underneath. So we've had beautiful openings from the children around, "I feel that I'm not smart in this way," or "I feel worried about this," or we've been able to sit with them in their anger and move past it to get to some of the beautiful stuff underneath. We have this beautiful story of this little one in foundation who just, whenever they were starting to do some writing, our beautiful guide was telling me this little one would always go, "I'm tired," or "I need to have a nap," or she would just always look for anything to not have to do it. And so she resisted and resisted for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then when the guides had some space one time, and this little girl, you know, "We're going to write the letters in your name. You know, there's some letters in your name." And this little one was like, "Oh, I don't want to do it." And the guide just said, "You know what? I'm going to sit with you, and I'm going to sit with you for as long as you need. And I want you to tell me all the things that feel hard about it. And she's like, I can't do it and I'm not good at it. And she was big tears and big crying. And our guy just sat there and like, I hear you. And she didn't try and convince her of anything different. She didn't try and fix her. She just went, I know it's really hard doing things that feel challenging. And I'm just right with you. And we will, you know, I'm here. And so, you know, there was like 15 minutes of complaining and crying and I can't. And then she picked up the pencil and she wrote the tiniest little P at the corner of her paper. And the guide was like, oh, I'm going to take that as a win, right? And then the next day or two, she came back in and she said, you know, because this little girl would just refuse to write or hold a pencil or anything. And then the next day she came in and she said, how do I spell da 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 da? Because that's what I did on the weekend. And then wrote this full sentence, right? And the guide was just like, wow, this is a child who wouldn't even write a letter, wrote a full sentence. And then they were doing some sharing at the end of the day, what was the best part of your day? And this little girl goes, writing, I love learning so much. Writing is amazing. And the guide was like, oh, my God.
Wow.
But she was saying, she was telling me this story going, it was such beautiful evidence about sitting in the uncomfortable with them and to say, I know this is hard and I believe that you'll do it and I'm right with you. And she moved past those feelings and now she's just writing nonstop. She's like, she can't get enough of it. So, you know, it's and there's many things, I think, many stories we have like that where it's about, it's not trying to fix a child. It's not trying to convince them they can do it. It's about meeting them where they're at, making it okay, and offering the possibility of, you know, I believe that you can when you're ready. So we've seen that with kids with writing, with reading, with so many things that many children will resist doing because they're worried they're going to get it wrong. They don't think they're good enough at it. You know, we talk about failure at our school. It's just like a first draft. Like no one gets a first draft right. We all just keep trying. So we model failure heaps. We model how we mess up. We talk about how we make mistakes all the time because we're learning and we're doing it. And again, we hear languaging from the kids, even when they're building the sand city and stuff. That's okay. It didn't work. Let's try it again this way. Let's, you know, there is, again, what we're trying to help the children understand or learn, you know, is that we're all learning and we just, we give it a go and we see what happens and we reflect on it. And so, you know, there's many, many stories like that of children that have been really resistant with their learning or worried, and then they move some of the feelings, they move some of the stuckness, and then it's just, it's brilliant. So there are many, many, many beautiful stories, you know, that, yeah, that we keep seeing and hearing. Yeah. And not only that, I think kids who came to our school that were very quiet, perhaps very shy, very, you know, just wouldn't speak up, you know, and now they're up there in front of groups of kids talking and running reading sessions and doing all sorts of stuff that perhaps they wouldn't have before. And parents reflecting back to us just going, man, I can see their spirit coming alive. And we're like, yes, that is what we want.
Oh, unreal. Great stories. Thanks, Lael. Do you have any like resources for the adults that they can maybe access if they wanted to dip their toes into this trauma-informed approach?
So I have worked a lot with a way of parenting called Aware Parenting, which is developed by Dr. Aletha Salter. So she wrote a book called The Aware Baby, which wouldn't necessarily be a book that if you're an educator you wanted to start with. She's got a great book called Cooperative and Connected, and that really talks about listening to feelings and what gets in the way for children when it becomes to behavior or cooperating or connecting. So a lot of my work is influenced by, you know, our natural innate healing ability that we all have to process feelings and emotions. And when we don't, we then learn to repress them or we turn them into aggression. And that's what we see on the outside. So when we can learn to express our feelings in healthy ways, we feel more balanced, we feel more connected, you know, our capacity to learn increases. So Aletha Salter's work has definitely influenced me and what I've done. I think Alfie Cohen's work is beautiful. His book's Unconditional Parenting, his book Punished by Rewards. He's got books on education, which are brilliant. So I definitely recommend reading his work as well. Even the work around nonviolent communication, Marshall Rosenberg, his work or books around communication and talking and all those kind of things can also be really, really powerful. You know, for me, look, I do a lot of work, and I work mainly with adults, educators and parents, on what I call imprinting, which is basically all the messages and imprints we received as children that we believe to be true and that we often then keep repeating, you know, as adults. So our belief systems around trust, our belief systems around anger or feelings or relationships or love or money or all those kind of things. So for me, I run courses and workshops on how we get to unpack what are our imprints, what serves us, what doesn't, and then how that turns up in our relationships, which equally is how it turns up at work as well. Mm. So there's a lot of beautiful stuff out there. I love the work of Dr. Gabor Mate, who has a documentary called The Wisdom of Trauma that I highly recommend every adult watches.
Yeah, I think you
can access it for free sometimes. So, yeah, it's amazing. And that really is what he talks about in The Wisdom of Trauma as to why we have addiction and pain and illness and all that kind of stuff. The work I do with parents, and particularly what we're doing at Woodline, to me is the antidote to that. So if we don't want our children to have to keep repeating these patterns, generational patterns, if we want our children to grow up and not have addictions and you know, dysfunctional relationships, then it starts now by listening to their feelings, by connection, by how we educate them, all those kind of things. So for me, when I watch The Wisdom of Trauma, I just sat there going, yes, this is exactly why I do the work we do, so that we don't have to get to that place. So I highly recommend that documentary. It's a really good one to watch. Mm.
And I think for the literary nerds as well, I think they discussed this in Aldous Huxley's The Island.
Oh, I don't know if
you've read that, but like, no. It's a bit of a tough read, but the concept of this sitting with the feelings, and if you fall over and scrape your knee, tell the story to someone a few times over until you stop feeling sad about it.
Yeah.
It's really nice. Thanks for that. Now, I want to just explore what your wish for education is.
Oh, that's big.
Yeah. I like the big
one. So, what is my wish? I wish that we focus on the child, not the data.
Yeah.
I wish that we create systems. Oh my goodness, I don't know if you can hear that. There's some very, very loud cockatoos outside my window screaming.
Nature
I'm sorry.
Is coming.
It's just so like, we're here. Sorry. Okay, where was I? Yes, about the child, not the data. I would love our teachers to have more understanding and training and support to be who they can be so they can turn up and teach in the way they want. So I think our system needs to change massively. It needs a huge overhaul. I think we need to support our teachers way more than what we do, because I just do not think they get the recognition, the support, the understanding, the holding that they need. I wish for education that we get children back to tuning into who their innate spirit and nature is, and how do we foster that so they can be the best versions of themselves. And so we give more opportunity for learning in ways that make sense to them, whether that's moving their body, using their hands, reading, teaching other students what they're learning, whatever it is, you know, learning by themselves, whatever it is that they need to take in information. I think that we need to overhaul the curriculum so that we teach them stuff that is relevant for being a human and that has real world learning in it, so that when children are learning something, they understand why they're learning it, not just because that's in the textbook and that's what we should do.
Mm.
So I feel like that would make a massive difference, again, to the children, the understanding the why. So they're not just regurgitating information back to you and then completely forgetting it. They're not learning. They're just basically telling you what we're, you know, meant to, what they think we need to hear. There's many elements. I think we need to play way more. I think we need to be connected in nature more. I think children need way more choice and autonomy. I think they need to move their bodies when they need to move their bodies, and eat when they need to eat, and go to the toilet when they need to eat. I think we need to give them more freedom to be who they need to be, because if we want to raise a generation of critical thinkers, then we need to treat them as such. We need to give them the opportunity and space to be that. So I know that's huge and that's a big difference, but I think now is the time. Now is the time for change. I think we've just lived through a really interesting time in history where we've seen where a lot is off track, and how do we come back to what is going to serve us as a planet and as humans. And I think the way we treat children, the way we educate children, is the most critical thing we need to do, because they are the future.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Al. And it's so great that you're already walking that path, you know, towards that dream that you have for education. So
look, we are trying. It is not perfect, you know. We're a year and a half in. We learn so much. We're constantly like, oof, that didn't work, that's good. You know, that we are not perfect. We are so willing though to learn and lean in and do it differently, and I think that's what's exciting.
That is
that we've got this opportunity to go, what could it look like, and how can we keep evolving and coming back to this center point again and again and again, which is the whole child. Where are they in this? How do we help them feel safe? How do we help them connect to who they truly are? How do we help them learn to express that? You know, how do we help to raise these brilliant humans that can hopefully clean up a lot of the mess that we've created on this planet?
Yeah, gosh. So speaking of which, my last question for you, Lael, and I ask everyone this, because this is the Teacher Healer podcast.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is the potential for education to heal the planet?
I think it's vital. I think it's 100% there. I think, you know, for me in the work I do, so much of it is about the family unit and how we treat our children, how we respond to our children, what we model to our children is so important. And so I think on one level, the family unit is the biggest influence. But then next to that is education, and the amount of hours a child spends, perhaps in education, is really, really important. So who are the adults that are influencing them? What is it that we're teaching them that influences them? You know, I absolutely believe that it has a huge part to play in creating healing, but I think it's us adults that need to do the work first. You know, we need to do the work on ourselves. We need to question a whole lot of what's going on. You know, I think we need to create the change so that our children can then come through and do it differently. And look, you know, I've seen that with my own children. Just in doing the work for myself, or in parenting in a certain way, really inviting their feelings and emotions and encouraging them to be the best of who they are. I definitely see it my two adult children so far. Their deep empathy and compassion for humankind is innate. They don't have to work at it. It just is, because that's what's been modeled to them, or that's what they've experienced. And I think that's what we need to do as adults. We are the guides and the teachers, and it's about how to be an incredible human is what they're watching and learning.
I love that idea of the word guide and everything that that means. I think there's a lot of reflecting we can maybe do around that term as adults, not just as teachers, you know.
Yeah. There's one last thing I'd love to just share with you, which is whenever I do training with a team or anything, I always ask the question, who was your favorite teacher, or who influenced you the most? And everybody, when they share their stories, talks about one human who saw them, who they felt seen by, who connected to their spirit, who encouraged them when no one else did, who went out of their way to check in with them. Every adult talks about that one teacher who either inspired them or made them feel seen. And I'm like, okay, that's what you're remembering. You're not going, this one taught me how to do maths really well, or this person, you know, made science experiments really fun. Like, you know, and maybe there is some of that there, but it was about the human connection. That's what they remembered. And so I think for any teacher listening, don't underestimate how powerful your human spirit is in connecting with a child, what impact that has. Like that's one of the greatest things you have here. We may not be able to change how the system runs or the policies or those kind of things just yet, but what you do have control over is your deep connection with others. And that doesn't cost anything. That is just time, and that is openness and willingness to look someone in the eye, to see their spirit, to encourage them to keep being magnificent. You know, that is what we can all do.
Gorgeous. And I think, like, if you're willing to dig into that topic more, listeners, tune into my episode with Julie Hassan, who she writes some books on that exact thing, how we remember our teachers. And I certainly have my own story, so shout out to Miss Stanfield. You're the one for me, and you know it. I actually just wanted to check back in a little bit with your vision for the healing of the planet. Do you have a bodacious, bold vision of what that looks like, a healed planet, because we've done our job here?
That's a big sigh. For me, it would be for all humans to feel safe enough to feel, to know that anger and sadness and vulnerability is just as valuable as joy and happiness and passion. For me, a healed planet is one where we own our stories, where we don't project our pain and hurts onto others, but we ask the question, what is this about for me? And what am I feeling? And what do I need to lean into? For me, a healed planet is humans that remember who they are, connect into their spirit, and don't look outside of themselves to make themselves feel like they're okay. You know, and I think that for me stems back so much into how we were raised, because many of us were taught to be good boys and good girls. And the message we get within that is, if I'm good, then I'm lovable and I'm okay. And so we spend most of our lives looking around going, does this make me good? Do you approve of me? Have I got enough money now? Am I successful? Instead of actually just knowing that the truth is that we are all enough. Purely because you were born, you are enough. Yet we all have to work really hard to remember that, or to even know that that exists as a possibility. So for me, it is about a healed planet. It's about everyone coming home to themselves.
Gorgeous. Thank you. Thanks for showing up today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Teacher Healer podcast. Find more episodes and information at www.teacherhealer.com. If you're enjoying what you're hearing, please rate us or refer us to your friends and colleagues. And if you care about saving the world from plastic, click on the Zero Co link in the show notes to learn what you can do to help.